Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are here again, as always, to talk about Dune Part 2. Just had a little fire alarm.
Not a fire alarm.
Smoke detector.
Smoke detector is being annoying as fuck because the battery's dead.
Yeah. Yeah. It would have been an opportune moment to start a fire in your home. I missed out.
I really know that you just have a lot of arson tendencies to like...
It's been a while. I haven't done a good arson in a long time.
Jesus Christ.
No, I'm kidding. No, that is settled. We have new batteries installed and we are good to go.
No beeping involved.
No beeping involved. So we are here to pick up right where we left off. Minute 128 through 129.
On our mid-sentence, mid-word, very rude cutoff.
Reverend Mothman? Question mark? No, John. Of course it was Reverend Mother.
Of course.
You silly idiot. Oh, you dumb, beautiful idiot. Why would they say Reverend Mothman?
I don't know. Maybe Denise just a fan of cryptids.
That would be really fun if just a random Mothman appeared.
In Dune.
Yeah. No, so the whole quote is, "You've been preparing me my whole life, Reverend Mother." Now, yesterday I kind of talked about how there may be one more layer to this. Like I said that she kind of snapped back into Bene Gesserit mode.
Yep.
You said she was accepting her lot in life, basically. When you hear the full quote, I sense a lot of snark in this.
Oh, there's definitely like some spite in there.
Oh, man.
Because she's recognized, oh, I'm just your bitch.
Yeah, she's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
So.
And she kind of stares Gaius Helmenheim down for a couple seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe longer. But all we know is that we cut from Kaitan back to Arrakis.
Right.
Everything is tan again. It's dark.
It's perfect.
It's hard to see. But what we do see is someone out of focus because they're too close to the camera, mm-hmm. stuffing stuff into a bag.
Yep.
And in the background, in the shadows, is the very pale but tattooed face of Jessica.
Yeah. And she's kind of in her, like, casual Friday Reverend Mother robes.
Yep. Yeah, the big mom squad headgear is gone.
Yep.
No veils. But she's standing there with her arms crossed, kind of just looking at...
She looks very comfortable.
At this person who is Chani stuffing this bag.
Man, I think we've said this about every single costume, but most of these costumes look comfortable as hell. Or at least the robes that we see.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a robe guy. I have a bathrobe and I use it sometimes, but I'm never like... I don't have the leisure time in my life.
You're not casually hanging out in a robe.
No. I don't think my roommate would appreciate it. nor do I ever have time after a shower to just lounge in a robe.
That's fair.
I'm always doing something after the shower. But all of these robes, man, they look comfortable as hell.
Yeah. Yeah, big cloths generally are for the most part. Or they're just itchy as hell.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Though I imagine desert cloth is probably pretty light to,
oh, it's got to be a linen, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be a linen.
Maybe. I'm not entirely familiar with the textile sciences of Arrakis. I'm sorry.
Listeners, if you are.
Let us know. First of all, why? Secondly...
Let us know. I think it's got to be some kind of linen.
Yeah.
But regardless of the material, Chani is throwing clothes in this bag.
Mm-hmm.
She's throwing all sorts of stuff in here, packing with haste.
As you do.
And Jessica says, "You're heading north with the others." Now, Chani is still pissed.
Yeah. I mean...
She's still so pissed. Like, I think we said when we were talking with Martin, like the demeanor that Chani had kind of at the end of the Water of Life scene where she slapped Paul and walked out.
Where she smacked the fuck out of Paul.
Right.
Yeah.
That is going to be her demeanor for the rest of the movie. For the
with,
most part.
With one exception. Yes.
Okay. So just seething, she says, I'm Fedaiken. I follow my leaders. If fighting goes north, I go north. Jessica's trying to, I guess, smooth things over or make amends or something here.
She's speaking on behalf of her son, where she's like, well, Paul didn't have a choice. And Chani's just not having it. She's like, I don't give a fuck about him. I'm fighting for my people.
Truth be told, I'm a little bit on Chani's side here. Paul did have lots of choices.
Yeah.
He didn't have to do all this.
He didn't have to. But he still did.
He still did. So, I...
You'll never lose me, Paul Atreides. Not as long as you stay who you are.
Yes.
My love that is... conditional, unconditional love.
My love is unconditional, except for this one big fucking condition. Yes, I will not be fighting for him. I'm fighting for my people. And I love that Jessica just, like, changes the subject really quick.
Well, good luck.
Yeah. She just kind of like nods to this and goes, well, I came here to wish you luck.
Chani, in a very, you know, snappy, snarky way, basically is like, hey, you know, I'd do the same, but, you know, clearly your shit's all sorted out. You're good.
Yeah. Which
she,
I mean,
she specifically says, I'd wish you the same, but it seems you've won your battle.
Yeah. And again, she's right.
Yeah.
Chani is in the right here. This is what Jessica wanted.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Gurney wanted. This is what Paul, I mean, it took some convincing, but this is what ultimately he wanted.
This is what the rest of the Bene Gesserit wanted. They mm-hmm. wanted to, like, you know, get this whole Lisan El Gaib thing going.
Yeah.
I think Jessica took it farther than they wanted it to go, but ultimately...
further, quicker.
Yeah. But ultimately, the Missionaria Productiva worked.
Yeah, it did.
A little too well.
So I think Chani is so well within her right to be fucking pissed right now. Because she, as our, you know, surrogate naysayer, the opposite of Stilgar, she is the, you know, supposed to be the level-headed, unreligiously biased person in the Fremen here. And she is seeing their entire culture being used as a pawn
mm-hmm.
and just like she can't turn back now. This is it. It's done.
Who'd have thought this would ever happen?
Certainly not the author of the story. Now, when Chani says this, you know, but it seems you've won your battle. Did you pick up on the quick little eye roll that Jessica gave?
Yep. Well, so there's a quick little eye roll, and then there was also some, as Chani is saying this, she's like beginning to leave the room, and she's like pretty fronted up on Jessica, so they're pretty close to each other, very WWE style almost, still very like fronted up against her, and Chani then just like storms out of the room.
Yeah.
Jessica's like, whatever, you're a fucking teenager, you're gonna be an angsty little bitch, fine. And then
we don't sit here long.
We get one of the most visually pleasing scenes in this entire movie.
It's so good. We're back in space, John.
Space.
And not only are we back in space, we get an egg ship.
Egg. Yeah, it's just a much larger version of the Herald's ship from mm-hmm. part one.
It was. And I opened up part one again and made sure that they were the same design.
Mm-hmm. However, this one is chromed the fuck out.
Dude, the Imperium, especially the Emperor, or specifically the Emperor, loves fucking chrome.
Do you think there's an Imperial chrome shop in Alabama? That just does all this for them.
Have you ever seen what it takes to like chrome a bumper on a car?
It's a lot.
Yeah. It's not just like a material.
Just shining it. You're not buffing it or anything.
Well, no, it's like a special material that you put on there, and it is a lot of fucking polishing.
Sure. But it's not, what I'm saying is like, you're not just taking it and just shining it. Like, no. You got to do a lot.
Yeah. And it takes a long time just to do like the little pieces on a car that you would see. Now, this ship is fucking massive.
Yeah. It is so much larger than the Herald ship that we saw earlier.
Right.
I think there's no like quantifiable size,
here's an analogy.
Well, I was going to say, but Art and Soul does say that they wanted it to be several factors larger than the ship that we saw in part one. And it is.
So here's the analogy that came into my head. If we're comparing them to eggs, because they do look like, you know, little egg ships.
Egg.
Herald ship would be a quail egg. This ship would be an ostrich egg. That is the size difference that we're talking about here. Real big. So we get to see this egg from the back, which is not a vantage point that we've really seen before.
And it's from the side.
I thought we saw the engine on the back.
No. This is all side egg.
Oh, side egg. All right, cool.
Yeah, this is side egg as it's descending into Arrakis's atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then what you were seeing was the plasma that was forming on the egg as it is
going
up against the... Oh, are you talking about the round bit?
The round part on the back.
That's just the round part of the round, like, side of the egg.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Got it. No, because I made special note of the like the heat shields as they are like lighting up as it enters the atmosphere, and like all you see like the plasma like fire like start to build up. Beautiful, absolutely fucking beautiful. I love the realism that we get with this.
The actual science behind a giant ship entering an atmosphere at like very high speeds.
Yeah,
it all is real science.
Yeah.
And if Dune has given us one thing, it has been absolutely gorgeous, fantastic scenes of ships in space, both in Denis Dune and in Prophecy.
I'm sorry, John, did you just compliment Prophecy?
Yeah. I will give Prophecy compliments.
note the time.
I will give Prophecy compliments where it deserves them.
Yes.
I will also criticize Prophecy in the many places that it deserves that, in my opinion. However, you cannot say that the scene of the Highliner coming out of subspace in Prophecy is not one of the coolest fucking scenes in any sci-fi show.
Well, coming out of the void, but whatever. We won't pick nits on that.
It's a space between dimensions. Fucking deal with it.
it's really good. And I know you noted this as well, or at least maybe not in your actual notes, but you made note of it in your mind. Wonderful sound here.
Oh, I've got all sorts of notes about sound, because we have... So from the music perspective, it actually starts with Chani and Jessica. As Chani is storming out of the room, we start getting like a high-pitched string. And then it builds and builds, and we see the ship, and it's like really like orchestrating, you know, building up as the ship is descending. And then we leave space and we are looking from the ground up.
Yeah.
Through
some monoculars.
Through a telescope. Before we leave space, though, I just want to point out, we do see the shadow of one of the moons in the background as well. Hard to tell whether it's Muad'Dib or if it is the Hand of God, but it is one of the moons in the background. But yes, we are back on the ground now, looking through a telescope up into the sky. And not only do we have the sound of the music, but then we have the two sonic booms of the ship re-entering atmosphere.
Yeah.
And we see this giant ship just like floating in the sky, you know, as it's slowly descending down to the planet.
a very nice controlled descent, I must say. As someone who is struggling that with their own personal landings, this one was real nice.
Just be better, dude.
Hey, that's why we practice.
And we hear Gurney say that the Emperor took the bait.
Now, pause on this line just for a second. I heard a lot more of Josh Brolin's, like, accent in this.
Yep. Almost sounded a little Llewellyn Moss.
Yeah, okay, so I was going to say either it was his No Country for Old Men accent or his Men in Black 3 accent, if you remember that.
I don't.
You know, they're very similar. Where he's just playing a young Tommy Lee Jones, which is a West Texas accent.
Is he in Men in Black 3?
Yeah, he plays the young K. If I'm wrong on this, I'm going to be so upset. I'm almost certain he is.
I also didn't watch Men in Black 3.
It's pretty good, honestly. Oh, he for sure is.
Yeah, he is.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if there's any actor you're going to have play a younger version of Tommy Lee Jones, it is going to be Josh Brolin.
Yeah, and Tommy Lee Jones historically has a West Texas accent, which is what they were doing in No Country for Old Men. So it all makes sense.
Spoilers, it takes place in West Texas. Yeah. Who would have thought?
But when he said this line, I was like, oh man, he went full into his own accent. He took the bite.
He took the bite.
Took the bite.
Yep. Paul is also with Gurney at this point, and he's, you know, also looking up at the shift or at the ship, but then he shifts his attention off towards the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
We'd see this just massive dust storm.
Yeah.
And we end the minute with Paul saying, well, the Emperor is very obliging.
Obliging. I love that. So, yeah, I mean,
good minute.
It's not a lot to talk about and to dissect in the minute, but fucking, yeah. Okay. The Emperor's here, you know, he has made his way. I guess that's what it, well, hang on. Do we get confirmation on what Paul's message cylinder actually said later in the movie? So what do you think it said?
I think it said, I'd lived, bitch, fight me.
Okay. If he was going to elucidate any more, I think he was going to say something like,
I challenge you.
You need to be here. Spice production is in jeopardy. I know
you must pay for the crime of murdering my father.
Yeah. Saying something like, I know what you did last summer or whatever.
I lived, bitch. I have a thing about this minute that I want to talk to you about.
Okay. Go for it.
So in Dune, the book, there's a very notable conversation between Chani and Jessica. And it wouldn't make sense for it to be right now in this moment because Irulan hasn't been introduced to Paul yet. But I think if there was ever a time for Jessica to have said anything about Paul and Chani's relationship for Denis's movie, it would have been now, where in the book there's a conversation about how, like Jessica, Chani will forever be Paul's concubine.
Oh, you're talking about the last paragraph of the book.
Yeah the very last, like, moments.
Yeah,
where
history will call us wives, the very last quote and last, like, two or three sentences to the book is from Jessica to Chani. Think on it, Chani. That princess will have the name, yet she'll live as less than a concubine, never to know a moment of tenderness from the man to whom she's bound. We, Chani, we who carry the name of concubine, history will call us wives.
Okay. I feel like with how this movie ends and how we go from the fight right to leading off to Galactic Jihad.
Right.
There's no real time for that conversation between Chani and Jessica. Whereas, like, in this moment, it wouldn't have been, it didn't need to be, like, verbatim, obviously, because Paul hasn't said that he will, you know, take Irulan's hand, but they could have done something to say,
yes,
Paul's on this track, but I promise you that he's still, like, you are still everything to him, or something to that effect.
I don't want to get into this right now.
Okay.
Because I think you're right, but I want this conversation to happen at the end of the movie.
That's fine. All I'm saying is that to
we,
me,
we just missed the opportunity.
Yes. This was the moment where it should have been.
In this movie, I think you're right. Yes. But I'll have a lot more to say about that once we actually get introduced to the dynamic with Irulan and Paul and Chani and everything.
Sure.
But yeah, I agree with you. This would have been the moment as the story is unfolding, as we know it, to say that.
Yep. But clearly we didn't get it.
But so we don't.
We're going to go with what we've been given in the movie and move on from there.
Yeah.
The Emperor is very obliging, and our minute ends looking at a dust storm.
Yes, it does. And what a dust storm it is.
We'll find out what kind of a dust storm on tomorrow's episode.
Hey, look at that. Perfect. Perfect segue to tomorrow.
That was my only beef or moment here.
Yeah.
I will say, I don't have any confirmation in any of the behind the scenes moments, but this room looks oddly familiar in that it looks like it's the same set piece room that they had very early in the movie when Jessica, after Jessica had been informed that Paul had ridden Shai Hulud, where mm-hmm. she was kind of off on her own, talking to Alia, pacing back and forth.
Interesting. It would. Okay. So if it was the same room, as maybe just shot from the other direction.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, I believe that. Why not reuse a room?
I mean, you built the set. Might as well use it.
We didn't see it from this angle.
Exactly.
Cool. Yeah. No book notes or anything. They talk about the storm as a tactical piece for cover, basically.
Well, I guess we'll have to figure that out later.
Yeah. It's a little bit later, and I'll have those book notes for when the shit goes down. So.
Dun, dun, dun. Well, if that's going to do it for today, I think we'll call it there and move on. You can find the Dune Minute online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com. You can email DuneMinute@gmail.com to get in touch with us that way. We'll see you tomorrow for a Friday episode, and we'll round this week out.
All right. See you then.
Later.